The Krebs on Security piece about TV streaming sticks is something every consumer should read before their next electronics purchase. Brian Krebs has documented a pattern where cheap streaming sticks, the kind you find on Amazon Marketplace from unfamiliar brands, or at gas stations and discount retailers, are shipping with pre-installed malware or with firmware that phones home to control infrastructure in ways the user never consented to.
The mechanism Krebs describes isn't new, but it's become more systematic. The supply chain for cheap Android-based devices often involves firmware that's been modified somewhere between the chipset manufacturer and the final product. The modifications range from adware injection to full remote access tools. Because these devices run Android and users don't typically sideload apps or inspect network traffic, the malicious behavior often goes completely undetected.
The economic incentive structure is grim. If you're manufacturing a streaming stick at a $15 price point and selling it for $25, your margin is thin. But if your firmware also participates in a click fraud network or provides residential IP proxy services to whoever pays for access, the economics improve dramatically. The consumer has no visibility into this and no easy way to audit it.
Krebs's practical advice is to stick to streaming devices from companies where the brand reputation is the primary business. Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Google Chromecast. Companies where the hardware is a means to a media platform and have a different incentive structure than pure-play hardware commodities sold on price alone. That's not a guarantee, but it's a meaningful risk reduction.
The trusted URLs via cryptographic signatures piece from Certisfy addresses a different security problem, the fact that URLs are trivially forgeable and phishing attacks exploit that routinely. Their proposal is to sign URLs cryptographically so that a recipient can verify that a URL was generated by a specific origin, not forged by an attacker. The HN comment thread is skeptical about deployment complexity, but the underlying problem is real.
Now, the Glass story is one I found genuinely surprising. Ed Conway's Substack piece titled The Glass Famine describes a shortage in high-quality specialty glass, not window glass or bottle glass, but the specific grades of glass used in fiber optic cables, scientific instruments, semiconductor manufacturing, and pharmaceutical packaging. These aren't interchangeable with commodity glass. They require precise chemical compositions and manufacturing conditions.
The supply chain for specialty glass is concentrated in ways that make it vulnerable. The major producers, Corning, Schott, AGC, make most of the specialty grades that advanced industries depend on. When demand spikes across multiple sectors simultaneously, which happened as semiconductor fabrication, pharmaceutical expansion, and fiber optic buildouts all accelerated in the same window, the production capacity bottleneck becomes visible.
What Conway's piece does well is trace the second-order effects. If you can't get the right borosilicate glass for vaccine vials, you can't scale certain pharmaceutical manufacturing. If you can't get the right grade of silica glass for fiber optic preforms, you can't build out broadband infrastructure at the pace governments are mandating. These shortages don't make headlines the way chip shortages do, but the dependencies are equally structural.
There's also a workforce dimension. The craft knowledge required to produce specialty glass, the chemistry, the furnace operations, the quality control, is concentrated in a relatively small number of facilities and individuals. Unlike semiconductor manufacturing, where the equipment embeds a lot of the knowledge, glass manufacturing still requires significant human expertise that doesn't scale quickly.
Here's where I want to spend some time on what we might have wrong today, specifically on the refactoring and AI-generated code thesis that came up earlier in our developer tools discussion.
Walk me through your concern.
The confident claim from the Fowler article and from much of the HN discussion is that AI-generated code creates a new and particularly insidious form of technical debt. Debt that's architecturally problematic but locally clean, and therefore harder to identify in code review than traditional human-generated debt. That's the consensus view. But what if that assumption is backward?
You're suggesting that AI-generated code might actually be more refactorable, not less.
It's worth taking seriously. Human-authored technical debt often comes bundled with tribal knowledge. The reason the code is structured this way lives in someone's head or in a Slack thread from 3 years ago. AI-generated code, in principle, doesn't have that opaque historical context. It can be regenerated from a better prompt. The refactoring isn't understand why a human made this choice and decide whether to preserve the intention. It's give the model a better specification and run it again.
The counterargument is that the problem isn't regenerating individual functions. It's understanding the system-level contracts that accumulated incrementally. If an AI generated your authentication layer 6 months ago and your data access layer 3 months ago, and the two are implicitly coupled in ways that neither component's documentation makes explicit, you can't just regenerate one in isolation. You have to understand the dependency first.
That's a fair pushback. The key assumption that would need to be wrong for the optimistic view to hold is that AI-assisted development maintains some kind of coherent specification that the model can reference. If you're using AI in a pure vibe coding mode, type a request, accept the output, move on, you're building exactly the opaque dependencies Marcus is describing. But if the development process maintains living documentation of architectural decisions, the regenerate from spec option stays viable.
So what signal would tell us we're wrong about the debt thesis? I'd watch for whether large code bases with high AI contribution ratios are showing shorter or longer mean time to change in empirical studies. If it turns out that AI-heavy code bases are actually faster to modify over time, not slower, that would be a meaningful piece of evidence against the prevailing concern. We're not there yet. The data doesn't exist at scale, but that's the metric to watch.
And on the other side, if we start seeing specific classes of production incidents that are traced back to AI-generated code, creating architectural mismatches, not just bugs, but systemic mismatches, that would confirm the concern. The failure mode here would be subtle and slow, not dramatic.